The groundbreaking CBS Saturday morning television series, Pee-wee's Playhouse, premiered in 1986 and was given 22 Emmy Awards over its five seasons. Its creator, Paul Reubens, is now gearing up to bring his alter ego, Pee-wee Herman, to Broadway. He stars in the Pee-wee Herman show, along with the cast of characters from Pee-wee's Playhouse, Cherry, Jambi the Genie, Terry the Pterodactyl, and Miss Yvonne. Previews begin October 26th at the Stephen Sondheim Theater, and it opens November 11th. Its run has already been extended through January 2nd. Over the years, Paul Reubens has also taken on some other notable roles, most recently on 30 Rock and Pushing Daisies, and in the films Life During Wartime and Nailed, and I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show. Hello.
Hello.
Hadn't you retired Pee-wee Herman after Pee-wee's Playhouse ended its TV run in 1990?
No, not really. I mean, that's sort of what happened, but I never set out to retire Pee-wee Herman. I wanted to just have a little short break, and it
was a forced retirement.
It wasn't really even a forced retirement. That was so much work doing five seasons of that show. I wore too many hats on it, you know, and I co-wrote it, co-directed it, I produced it, and starred in it. And it was too much. I was just so exhausted at the end of it. I wanted to take a little break.
On the other hand, I'm assuming you missed him a bit.
I did. I missed him more recently, which is kind of what it was about to try to come back, you know.
What did you miss most about it?
You know, I miss just having that outlet. And in a strange way, I missed – I was really curious how to see my fans grown up, you know. I was really curious how to see – All the kids who I felt like who I tried to reach at that time, how it all worked out.
Well, how long had you been doing Pee-wee? Did you do him when you were with the Groundlings?
Yes.
So this is a character that kind of grew out of an aspect of your own personality, I imagine.
I think in some ways, yeah. I think I would be wrong to say there was none of Pee-wee in me.
Well, or at least took care of certain things that you were thinking about, a way of expressing certain things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we all invent personae, and an actor plays whoever the character is. But when you're creating your own, you're going to move in a certain direction. Somebody else is going to move in another direction.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was my father, actually, who said to me, you should figure out some way to be able to do this in one instead of having to... And he wasn't in the theater. He wasn't in show business. But he somehow knew. He said to me, you know, what you're doing, you need a theater. You need a crew. You need lights. You need all these. You need a script. You need other actors. There's all these things. Couldn't you figure out a way to make this more sort of like a painter only needs paint and a canvas and he's there? And I don't think he realized the magnitude of what he said to me, but it was really the beginning of that and a few other things mixed together kind of created Pee-wee Herman.
Well, there were all sorts of details that we just take for granted, like the tight-fitting gray suit with the trousers that are a little too short and the red bow tie and all of that. Were they there from the start?
Pretty much. They were close to. That suit came from a gentleman named Gary Austin, who was the co-founder of the Groundlings, which is the improvisational comedy group in Hollywood I was with, where Pee-wee Herman was created. And we were doing a long-form improvisation one evening over a course of 2 hours, and it was about a comedy club, like the Comedy Store, the Improvisation, Catch a Rising Star, one of those kind of places. And we were all supposed to be different types of comics. And I was so bad at trying to remember a punchline that I thought I would be the comic who, as soon as you spotted him, you would know he's terrible. He'll never make it.
Almost like Pinky Lee. Well.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I wasn't familiar with Pinky Lee.
I didn't mean to pick on Pinky Lee.
Well, I never was that familiar with Pinky Lee until I met him, actually, during the course of the original run of the Pee-wee Herman show in 1981. I met Pinky Lee. Which was just incredible. Because I did get compared to Pinky Lee by some people, and I didn't know the reference. So
well,
the
originally,
other person was, what is his name? Eddie Cantor. Mm. People of a certain age, and I think it had something to do with the makeup maybe, would always say to me, Eddie Cantor, you remind me of Eddie Cantor, and I didn't know Eddie Cantor at the time.
Well, it was also the tight pants. He used to wear them as well.
Oh.
But in either case, you were creating a character that was aimed at an adult audience. When did it move in the other direction?
Yes and no. I feel like it. I always was trying to look out for how to make that crossover and how to have a wider appeal. My earliest influences and my earliest goals were to try to find things that were universally funny that didn't depend on me making fun of an ethnic group or me making fun of somebody. I thought what I tried to do is turn it around and make myself the butt of the joke. So it was all about me, so it wasn't hurtful in any way to anybody else. And it was in many ways, I tried to find things that I thought kids would find funny and adults would find funny. So right from the get-go, when we started to do the Pee Wee Herman show at the Groundlings Theater, which later moved to the Roxy on Sunset Strip in California, we did matinees of the same show that we were doing at midnight. We did matinees for kids just to sort of have a reality check and see if what we were doing, if there was anything dubious. And it was incredible. And it was really the beginning of that sort of template for what became 5 seasons of my kid show and almost everything else I've done.
Well, I imagine the Broadway show won't have a word of the day and a healthy snack.
Oh, of course. No, it's absolutely going to have both of those things. Although I can't say the snack is very healthy. But we have a snack.
Did you have aspirations to be on Saturday Night Live like some of the other well-known groundlings, Phil Hartman, John Lovitz?
I did. Both of those people were on Saturday Night Live after my opportunity to be on Saturday Night Live.
And then Phil Hartman wound up on your show.
Phil Hartman was on my show actually way before Saturday Night Live. Phil actually came to Saturday Night Live when I hosted Saturday Night Live as a co-writer for me. We were very close and went back quite a number of years before we both had success. I forgot the question. I'm so thrown off.
Whether you had aspired to be on Saturday Night Live, you wound up going in a very different direction.
Yeah, I mean, my career is partially not being on Saturday Night Live was kind of what created part of my career. Desperation, angerness, and anger and bitterness, really. I was one of 22 finalists in the season of Saturday Night Live that was the only season not produced by Lorne Michaels, and it was the first season where they lost all the original cast. The season that would have been Joe Piscopo and Eddie Murphy, Gilbert Gottfried, those people. And I got flown to New York, and people were pulling me aside and telling me I was going to be on the show and look for an apartment because they always wait till the last minute. And then I didn't get it, and I panicked. I totally panicked and thought, you better figure something out because this is – I kind of thought that was going to happen for me. And it was a goal. It was an aspiration of mine. And I was so freaked out that I actually, when I touched ground in Los Angeles from that audition in New York, I called my parents from a payphone and borrowed $5,000 and began the process of producing and writing and creating a stage show for myself, which at that time we were calling a live pilot. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to get as many people to come see a stage show because I didn't have any access to how I could get a pilot made. And I thought this was a way to get people to come in Hollywood and go, oh, this could easily become a television show.
So how close was that to the show that wound up on Saturday mornings?
I think it was certainly a very strong influence. The original stage show, of which the Pee Wee Herman show that's opening on Broadway, is it's a hybrid of. That show had a playhouse, Pee Wee Herman, Miss Yvonne, Captain Carl, Terry the Pterodactyl, a genie, a Jombi the genie. So it had some of those elements. And then we sat down, me and a group of people, and decided how it was going to change and what was going to be different and what we were going to add to it with a budget and with a real venue to do it in. And the very first thing I wanted to do was to make it more multi-ethnic. So that dictated some of the characters were leaving and some new characters were being created. And
well, you had S. Apatha Murkison and Larry Fishburne and others on. I mean, people who have had wonderful careers since. And I don't remember. I remember suddenly there was this phenomenon, Pee Wee Herman. But was it a hit from the start when...
The show, the television series, yes. The television series was just did great numbers right out of the box, and the network was very excited because they had a lot of information on how it all broke down, and it was really, I guess, intriguing and confusing to them that so many adults were tuning in. And
Saturday then the
morning.
Movie. You had Tim Burton directing Pee-wee's Big Adventure. I mean, that's...
The movie
How did that
actually,
work out?
The movie actually preceded. I've done everything a little backwards. Most people go from television into the movies. I went from movies into television. A woman named Judy Price, a lovely woman who was the head of CBS Saturday morning children's programming, approached my manager at the premiere of Big Adventure and asked if I would like to do a animated cartoon for CBS. And I had done this show a few years prior, and I'd always loved the show and the premise, and I loved the live action quality of it and the characters. And when she said animated cartoon, I was just thinking about how there was almost no one real on Saturday morning. Keep in mind, Saturday morning at the time we're talking about was before cable. It was really when Saturday morning was when you saw children's programming, or if it wasn't on at 5 o'clock at the end of the day for an hour like Mickey Mouse Club. So the landscape has totally changed now for that type of a venue. But at the time, since it was all on Saturday morning, I felt like I could do something really different because all the shows I grew up with had live people and had real people on them. Nothing at the time on broadcast television was live. It was a live person. It was all animated shows, really pretty much to sell merchandise.
But it is ironic that Tim Burton, who directed the film, came out of Disney, even though he's doing a live-action film and he only recently wound up doing any animation.
Yeah, that's true. And even more ironically, he had created a short for Disney, which is how I found him, is I saw his short film, Frankenweenie, which Disney commissioned him to do, to put on the front of, I believe, Pinocchio. They were re-releasing something, and then they felt it was too dark and scary. And so it languished. It wasn't seen for many, many years until he got famous.
My guest is Paul Reubens, whose latest venture is a show on Broadway. I would love to have seen it in advance of our talking, but previews don't start until a couple of weeks from now. How close is it to what I already know?
Well, I think...
You did one in L.A., didn't you? Is this going to be the same
yes,
show that was in L.A.?
Yes, it's very much the
so
same.
So I just read the reviews and know...
Oh, from your mouth to God's ears. The reviews were great in Los Angeles, and I'm crossing my fingers that people like it here. I think they will. It's a very, very similar show. I've tried to beef it up and fix it up and make it even stronger and more dazzling for Broadway. You don't come to Broadway every day. I don't, for sure. This is my first time. And it's really, in a nutshell, the Playhouse comes to life on the stage. It's incredible. We have 11 actors, 20 puppets. Music, dancing. It's not a full-on musical, but it's a play with music. It has a plot. All the Playhouse characters are returning. Some original characters. I have the original John B. the Genie, John Paragon. Lynn Stewart plays Miss Yvonne from the original television series and the original stage show. I have an actor named Phil Lamar who's taking over for Lawrence Fishburne.
He's doing Law and Order or something like that.
Yeah. And just phenomenal cast, phenomenal people, and I think like if you were a fan of the TV show, then this is it on stage.
Although this gives you something that you didn't have with the TV show, which is you're performing in front of an audience, and so you get real feedback. You know when you're getting your laughs.
Yes, absolutely. That is a very, very different thing. I've spent quite a number of years now in sound stages doing movies and television and even comedy. You know, the technicians laugh at you. You know you're doing a good job, but it's not the same.
Is it difficult to get past being known for one very distinctive persona? Because after the show ended, you went out and got other kinds of jobs. And I wonder whether you had to convince people that you were more than Pee-wee Herman.
Absolutely. I think I had to convince people. I mean, there were people from my past who knew my other work. When I was at the Groundlings, I had 15 or 20 other characters besides Pee Wee Herman, but I stopped doing those all just to focus on this one thing. I was and am a little bit of a hard sell as far as to a casting director or a director. People do think of me as that one thing, but I've had a lot of great luck and work with phenomenal people and gotten to do all kinds of other work outside.
You played a cocaine dealing hairdresser in the film Blow that starred Johnny Depp and Penelope Cruz. That is a big departure from Sweet Little Pee-wee.
It's a leap, and yet it's full circle to a degree, because my earliest work was in Cheech and Chong films. So,
But they're the ones who took the drugs there.
That's true. Oh, not necessarily, though. No, we pretended to. We took movie drugs in one of those two movies. I was someone who took some drugs.
How did you end up hosting the world's biggest tequila dance and a motorcycle rally in South Dakota this summer?
Oh, my God. That was an incredible. I've never experienced anything like that, and fully plan on going back next year.
You have a big biker following?
I do, from Big Adventure. There's a biker scene in Big Adventure, and I've over the years met many bike enthusiasts and full-on bikers, and people have always been so sweet and nice and interested in Pee Wee Herman that when I was invited to go, it was the 70th anniversary of what is the largest biker rally in the world, Sturgis, South Dakota. 700,000 bikers were there. And it's at the foot of Mount Rushmore, which I had always wanted to see. So I killed two birds with one stone. I saw Mount Rushmore. At the end of that tour, the guide said, well, the Crazy Horse Monument's only 20 minutes away, which I had never even heard of, and blew me away. I couldn't believe how incredible that was. And 700,000 bikers, they presented me. I got a brand new bike, an electric Schwinn customized for Pee Wee Herman that's just staggering. And it was just an absolute incredible experience.
The original announcement was that the Pee Wee Herman show would be just 48 performances. It's been extended. Is it extended past 48 performances?
I believe it's 80 performances now. We're now playing. Our first preview is the 26th of October. We open November 11th and close January 2nd.
So, is it true there's a new Pee Wee movie in the works as well?
With
Judd Apatow?
Yes, wow. Yes, yeah. It's my luck is just taking a turn. It's absolutely incredible. I'm making a comedy, a Pee Wee movie with the absolute number one godfather of comedy currently in Hollywood. So I couldn't be more excited. The only drawback is it's meant that we won't take the show on the road. It won't tour. So if you're listening anywhere, this is the one shot here in New York, unfortunately.
Well, you talked.
Or fortunately.
You had that dark time when you didn't get on Saturday Night Live, and out of that came something fabulous for you. But was there a time in the intervening years since the show was it canceled, or did you just stop doing it?
No, the show absolutely was not canceled. It was a 5-year run. I had a contract for 5 years, and at the end of 5 years, I wanted a break. So,
but then there must have been a time when you thought, "Gee, am I ever going to wind up doing something great like that again?"
You know, I didn't really think about it. It sort of morphed into working in other people's films and doing other things that were not as pressured and not as tense as what I was doing, where I didn't wear as many hats, and it was calmer and to some degree more fun, you know, to be on a movie set where it was other people were the stars. I was a sidekick. I didn't produce it, write it, have any pressure to do anything other than be an actor for hire. It was kind of a luxury.
Well, what about the new film? Judd Apatow has a full team. They write, they direct. Are you going to be expected to wear a lot of hats anyway?
Well, I'm writing it. I'm co-writing it with someone that is someone who I really like and Judd really likes. And
so you know what the plot's going to be?
I do know what the plot's going to be, a little. I know a little bit about it. We're just going to start. We spent quite some time over the last 3 or 4 months coming up with many different ideas on what it would be. Judd just recently signed off on it. And so my plan is during the day while I'm on Broadway to be writing the movie. I wrote a good portion, rewrote a good portion of the Broadway show on Skype with someone in a different city. And we worked for about 5 months, 6-7 hours a day. I'm so used to being on a webcam now that to have an interview without seeing the other person or talking a business interaction or anything on the phone now seems odd to me.
Well, I'm glad that you're right here in the studio with me because because eye contact is really important in a conversation.
Yeah.
And I've always wondered about all those people who just do phoners, how they ever see that the person they're speaking to is being made uneasy or being made rather happy by what's going on. I think that's a really important part of conversation. And
it used to be. I don't know if it still is. I mean, it's we're old school, you and I. so I don't know. Like it's I guess teleconferencing on your phone now is catching up to texting and everything else. So you are able to now and will be able to very soon be more modern like that.
Well, tickets are on sale for the Broadway production of the Pee Wee Herman Show. Just 80-something performances, beginning with previews, which began on October 26th. Opening night is November 11th, and it's extended until January. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
Americans suffer from something like a billion colds a year. On Monday's show, Jennifer Ackerman explains what a cold is, how it works in the body, and whether it's really possible to fight one off. Then, a 3-time oyster shucking champion from Prince Edward Island demonstrates on air how to do it right. And This American Life contributor David Rakoff explains the benefits of seeing the glass half empty. Also, Darren Strauss tells how a tragic event long ago has not only haunted him but affected his writing. And director Olivier Assayas and actor Edgar Ramirez discuss their new film about the infamous terrorist known as Carlos the Jackal. The Let It Lopez Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help day from Andrew Katchen, Christina Maldonado, and Aida Sadakiani. Debbie Fountain was at the audio controls. I am Let It Lopez, your host. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.